Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for July the 29th, 2019. We have a special guest today, Brian Talley, a Marine Corps veteran, who is now working very hard to help veterans by changing federal law on VA medical malpractice. He will share his experience with us, but first, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David. How are you tonight, and how is everybody out there? I hope everybody's doing well. I want to remind our listeners that we are a call-in show, so you can call us at any time during the show. Tell us what's on your mind. If you have any comments, you want to talk to Brian, please feel free to do so. Our toll-free call-in number covering the entire United States is 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Back over to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. I'd like to introduce our guest today, Brian Talley, a former sergeant in the United States Marine Corps, was severely injured due to the incompetence of several doctors and emergency room staff at the VA hospital in Loma Linda, California. The misdiagnosis led to months of neglect and malpractice that eventually nearly cost him his life. He filed a medical malpractice claim against the VA under the Federal Tort Claims Act, also called the FTCA. After nearly a year-long battle with the VA's General Counsel Office attorneys, Brian was denied compensation for his injuries because the VA had concluded that the accused physician was not a VA employee but an independent contractor working within the VA system. The VA also concluded that it's not responsible nor accountable for the injuries or malpractice due to the current FTCA law contractor exception. Brian is now on a mission to change that law to protect all veterans from unidentified, quote, independent contractors, unquote, and to ensure that the VA is transparent and fully accountable. So let's welcome Brian Talley to the Veterans News Hour. Hello, Brian. Welcome to the show. How are things going?
Hello, sir. Hey, I'm hanging in there, just working hard on this legislation and trying to make a difference in the lives of all veterans.
Well, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Let's start at the beginning, if we could. Tell us what happened to you at the VA that led to your current fight to change the law, and then what happened when you filed that malpractice claim.
Yeah, sure. So in January 2016, my life changed in the ways that I could never imagined. I had endless grueling pain to where I was just laying on my cold bathroom floor just seeking for any relief that I could possibly get. I was just desperately trying to feel better. I had never felt what I was feeling ever before, and it just came on very suddenly to the point to where I was having severe night sweating and soaking my bed sheets. And after a couple days of me just completely sprawled out on my bathroom floor, I finally told my wife, I said, there's something going on here. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why I feel this. It's time to go to the ER. So within a few days of me feeling like this, I showed up to the ER's front doorsteps, and pretty much they did an x-ray, and they said that I had sprained my back and that everything should be fine. And I gave them all the signs and symptoms that I posed, and my wife felt that there should have been more done at the time, asked for a blood test, and the VA staff, the clinician, said that wouldn't be necessary. It's just a sprain, and that I had orders to follow up with my primary care. Before they let me go, they gave me Dilaudid, and they gave me Toradol and Kenalog, and a diagnosis of a low back sprain, and they pretty much sent me home with a cocktail of pain pills.
Wow. And what happened then when you got home?
I got back home, and I was just, at this point, I was completely drugged up out of my mind. I was in so much pain. I was in my chair. Everything just seemed to get worse. Now I couldn't use the restroom. And what little I could use the restroom, I had to kind of slide out of my chair and kind of straddle over a bucket and just drip into a bucket to empty my bladder, as I couldn't walk or, like I said, even really use the bathroom properly. So a day later, my wife loaded me back up. Well, it took several of my friends to get a call from my wife, who was kind of panicking, to walk me down the stairs. I couldn't walk. And they loaded me up in the car. They get me to the VA ER, where I was wheeled in a wheelchair. And I was in so much pain when we got there that I had a panic attack in the ER. And at that time, another nurse came out and gave me another shot of Dilaudid. And yelled at my wife because they had previously told her 2 days prior that I needed to follow up with my primary care physician. My wife did try to do that. We couldn't get through to the primary care physician that we were supposed to follow up with. So in dire straits and feeling that this was an emergency, she did the right thing and took me to the ER. At this time, she then asked for an MRI. Again, they said that they couldn't do an MRI. I had to follow up with my primary care, so on and so forth. So 3 days later, we finally were able to get a quick appointment with my primary care. It was just kind of like it was nothing that was scheduled. It was like, hey, kind of show up and I'll look at you real fast and just see what's going on. At that time, my primary care, this is now February of 2016, so a month, about 2 weeks had gone by total, or maybe a week and a half. I don't have all the dates in front of me. And then February, she had given us a diagnosis of a low back sprain, and she agreed with the VA ER staff on both of those occasions. She stated that that their diagnosis was correct and that I needed to go home, stretch, and give it a couple of weeks to get better, and then I should start feeling better. And then she gave me some additional pills. And I went home, and for the next month or so, I was literally dying in my chair. And at the time, I didn't know that, we were going through this pretty severe case of malpractice and neglect, as we had just thought, we were doing everything right. We were told that it's a low back sprain, everything's fine. So anyway, it's about a month later. There's been no change. Everything just seems to be just completely caving in on my life and the life of my family, as I just was deteriorating at a very fast rate. And my wife would continuously call and to try to get an MRI, Nothing was ever ordered, and it was seemed as if it was, you needed an act of Congress for me to get an MRI for the signs and symptoms that I was posing. So we paid out of pocket. My wife took me down to an imaging center here in the San Diego area, and they did an MRI, and it found all sorts of structural damage going on my back, which was completely just, I was dumbfounded to even know that there was stuff going on my back, because I had never hurt myself, and that was the weird thing about it. There was never any trauma. I just had all the signs and symptoms of the world to show that there was a problem. So the MRI showed we had a lot of stuff going on and I needed surgery. So we immediately took that MRI to the VA, and it was at that point that they said, oh yeah, you do need surgery, but we can't get your surgery done for 9 months because we are backlogged. So of course, you know, I would have died on the waiting list for surgery. But that did at least get some folks engaged enough to start to do the paperwork shuffle. And my wife advocated enough for me, and my brother, and, you know, my mom, some of my loved ones, family and friends advocated enough for me to say, hey, look, can we get this guy out in the VA Choice program to get this surgery done, as this is, you know, it seems like a very critical issue here, and we want to get him opened up just to make sure that he's okay and we can get these problems fixed. So a couple months later, still had to wait a few months to get the Veterans Choice even, but it's better than waiting the 9 months. To the surgeon's surprise, and this was done at Scripps Hospital in San Diego, as I laid opened up on the operating table, the doctors found the cause of my pain, and it was a bone-eating staph infection that was aggressively attacking my spine, and it was destroying the spinal bone, the tissue, the discs, and the nerves. And no one knows how I got it, how it got there. We don't know. It's just one of those mysteries. But a simple blood test would have detected much earlier on in this process, in an MRI, you know, with contrast, you know, would have, you know, shown that I had a severe infection and I was being eaten alive. And because of the negligence and the malpractice and the delays in treatment, you know, I ended up having this for 4 months. Wow. And so you could imagine what an infection can do to one's spine, their bladder, a kidney, your bowel, your bladder. I mean, your spine is your life. Your gut is your life. And that's where this infection had set up shop and just began to eat me alive. So one day I was living the American dream. You know, I was a small business owner, 4 kids, been married 21 years, served my country with honor, and have been a contributor to society my whole life. And then my world just stopped. I mean, just sat in a chair. And I would sit in that chair continuously all the way up until just a couple months ago. It finally started to get out of that chair a little bit, because I've been really working hard on trying to get better. It's either you try to get better or you just die. You just sit in that chair and die. And I just have so much more to offer in this world. And, you know, and I'm a young guy and I just want to live, you know, and try to overcome these tremendous obstacles that my family and I have faced over the last 4 years. So,
after Brian, let me ask you this: you then became aware of the fact that the VA had failed to diagnose the condition. You filed a malpractice claim. Tell us about that. What did that involve, and what happened?
Yeah, so once we realized that this untreated and very serious infection led to a host of other residual medical diagnoses, my family and I decided to file a tort claim, in SF-95, if you will, for the medical malpractice and gross neglect. To simply try to make me whole again, as I had a family and, you know, a business and such, and, you know, and I was injured due to no fault of my own. And Americans, you know, and most folks have, you know, this is why folks carry insurance and stuff for accidents that do happen. And 6 months into the claims process, I began to receive phone calls from the VA attorneys, the general counsel. And every single time they were on the phone, they made us feel as if everything was going to be okay. And at this time in my life, it was anxiety and depression riddled, pain, just emotional, mental, and physical, just pain. They kept repeating that the VA failed to meet the standard of care and that there was a breach in liability and that they are working on settling my claim. And, they were very sincere. They were apologetic. And they showed us a great deal of compassion as well. And these calls were coming in quite often from that 6 month to about that 10 month mark. So it came at some of our most desperate times of need, as now our finances were starting to stack up against us. We had already lost our family vehicle. Credit card debt was starting to be stacked up, and we were nearing, the end of our rope, if you will. And then right before they were supposed to get this settlement done, that like they said that they would do, we received a letter in the mail, and they dropped the bombshell on me. And, 10 months into this, well, it was nearly 1 year into the claims process, we received a letter and stated that the VA was not responsible for the gross neglect and malpractice, because the accused clinician, who they are putting it on, is not a VA employee. She is an independent contractor working within the VA. Thus, the Federal Tort Claims Act did not apply to her. And so the letter stated that if you are a non-U.S. government employee, the VA is not accountable nor responsible. So they sent a letter, and they let me know that my only viable recourse was to sue her in state court for the damages. Because of the very long time that it took to receive this crucial information, I turned right around and filed a claim in California. One, I couldn't find an attorney, and two, my California state statute of limitations had been blown by days.
Wow.
So if I would have known this information much sooner, I would have had a viable, I would have had a clear path of legal recourse. I would have had rights, and I would have had, the right to due process, to see this through, to get this investigated, to get, to do what anybody else goes through when they suffer a traumatic experience, especially one that's due to no fault of your own. And medical malpractice is, it sucks. It's no fun. It's the gift that keeps on giving. I have procedures weekly, and it's no fun.
Brian, let me ask you this. Now, from your viewpoint as a patient, when you went into the VA, this was a VA facility, correct?
Yes.
It was a VA facility.
Hospital.
Right, VA
yeah.
hospital.
Yeah.
Now, when you went in there as a patient, was there any indication at all, any signs, anything anyone said to you that said that this medical provider was not actually a VA employee? Was there anything that...
No.
Okay. And what actually was your conclusion? That this person was just an ordinary VA employee?
Correct? Well, being a veteran, I had no clue that the VA even had independent contractors working within the VA. And
right. They
do. I know this all now. And we're not talking about folks that go out for contractor choice stuff, because you already know you're going out to a civilian building, you're going to see civilian doctors. I am talking about doctors within the walls of the VA hospitals on their grounds that are, they're unidentifiable. These clinicians wear VA badges. They have VA business cards. They show up to the same place to work every single day. And typically in the private sector, those are called employees. But in the VA, those are called independent contractors. Now, the independent contractor clause, that, you know, you never really find out that you have an independent contractor until you screw up. And then if they screw up, you know, you'll find out way down the road to where it won't leave you any, you know, viable recourse. So it's
right.
It's very,
so let me ask you this. Sorry to interrupt, Brian. Let me just summarize. Yeah. So you went into this VA facility. You had no reason whatsoever to suspect that this doctor was not a VA employee. You had every reason to think that this doctor was a VA employee. There was admitted malpractice. The VA lawyers were admitting to you that there was negligence. And the only reason that they used to deny your Federal Tort Claims Act, your FTCA claim, was because this particular doctor, was a so-called independent contractor. And then by that point, it was too late for you to sue this person in state court, correct? Is that a good summary of what's happened so far?
Correct, yes.
Okay, now let's shift gears to
David, let me ask one question. Brian, how much time elapsed from the time that you filed your tort claim until you got the letter from the VA saying that they're not responsible?
It was 10 months.
10 months.
Okay.
And by then, your opportunity to sue this independent contractor had expired.
Yeah, it had blown by then.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So now, Brian, it brings us to where we're at now, which is you're on a mission to get this independent contractor exception addressed with the change in law that Congress has to enact. So, tell us about this. This H.R. 3813, what is that about?
The bill will essentially force the Office of General Counsel to work in good faith with veterans that have been injured or killed due to medical malpractice. Now, as the way the law sits right now, there is not a time limit that the Office of General Counsel needs to get back to you on. They try to get back and respond within your tort claims to 6 months, but there's nothing really inked in law that states that they need to provide you with any other information. And this is how they see their way out of a lot of these malpractice suits, is if they could tie one independent contractor to one's care. That's their way that they could see out of this. And by waiting until the state statute of limitations have blown, that's also their other way to protect the doctor who is working with them as an independent contractor. Now, you never know that they're an independent contractor until they get in trouble. And then, of course, if they protect the VA independent contractor from being in trouble, then therefore they never get send any bad paper up to the state board or the federal board for medical malpractice or, you know, whatever it may be. So H.R. 3813 is a bill that I have been working on for about 15 months now. And what it's going to do is it's going to essentially give the veteran some information on how to proceed with their federal tort claim. So, for an example, you get hurt, you file a tort claim, the VA is going to have 30 days to get back to you and say, hey, look, we see that the clinician here is an independent contractor, so therefore we have no responsibility here, but you can sue in state court, and here's the information that you need, and it's pretty much going to be a clear path of legal recourse. Or to come back as a VA employee, and they will then have the, you know, say, okay, we're going to go ahead and investigate this on our own because it's one of our own employees, and we will get back with you, you know. So it just gives the veteran, you know, some rights, you know. It lets the veteran know, hey, look, I was hurt. This is who's responsible for hurting me, or who, you know, the VA is blaming it on. And so you have some sort of, some sort of recourse. And there's much more to the bill too. I think it's like 7 or 8 pages. Mark Meadows and his team put it together, and it's just a lot of VA accountability type measures. And as we all know, we can't fix the VA in one fell swoop. So this is a good start to bringing some confidence back. And giving the veterans some protection that they all deserve.
Right. Well, what can you tell us as far as the action or inaction so far in the House of Representatives?
I mean, it's been received great. In September of 2018, let's scoot back. It was about July, August of 2018, I formed my own online legislative team after I couldn't find the help I needed for my own congressman. And I picked up a law book, and I created my own team with just average, everyday Americans. Some are veterans, some are not. Some are business folks, some are volunteer workers. And we all got together, like-minded individuals, and we drafted our own bill. And about a month later, I hand-delivered it to the halls of Congress. I went door-to-door urging lawmakers to change this shameful and very outdated law that only will protect the VA from seeing their way out of any malpractice suit. And within 30 days, I had the bill introduced. It had caught the attention of Congressman Dave Bratt, formerly of Virginia. He lost re-election by 300 or 400 votes, but he did give us some life. He introduced the bill. Like I said, within 30 days of us being there, became H.R. 7105. But unfortunately, like most bills, it would die in that session because there was only another month or a month and a half left. He didn't win re-election, and it died in the 115th Congress. So as soon as January came, 2019, we hit the ground running. Got a great team behind me of great everyday, veterans, Americans, just a grassroots cause that we are doing to change this law. And our work was finally it caught the eye of Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina, and he has recently reintroduced the bill, and now we have a new bill number in the 116th Congress. And I look very, very forward to working with folks like Congressman Mark Takano over in the VA committee, as well as Democrats, Independents, and Republicans, as the veteran community represents all walks of life, and this
right.
is to protect all veterans. So that's what we're doing now. So,
well, I applaud your effort and your the initiative you've taken on this. Brian, I think all veterans owe you a great deal of thanks. What can listeners do to help this project, to help this mission?
I mean, we need folks to positively engage with their elected members of Congress. Constituent pressure is probably one of the best things that you can do for citizen advocacy, and that goes for anything that you're passionate about. If you know that you need to do something and you need to step up for the good of the country and to right a wrong, and you pick up the phone and you say, well, I'm an American, I can help change this law for anything, like I said, you're passionate about. That's what we need. We need folks. I could spend 5 minutes a week or 5 minutes a month, make that phone call, send an email out, have Congress support and pass H.R. 3813 that will protect all veterans. So every veteran will have a clear path to legal recourse, and they will have the right to due process. And my story will never, ever repeat itself, as it has happened for generations. This is an absolute generational nightmare. It has ruined the lives of veterans or families or kids. Anybody who loves that fellow veteran who has been hurt, it affects everybody. It affects their employers. It affects everything. And it's just not fair to, have your livelihood stripped of you with no recourse. I mean, it's un-American. It's unconstitutional. And so I promised myself about a year and 3 months ago, after some very hard times, just anxiety, riddled depression in a very painful state, mentally, emotionally, and physically, and I knew I had a little bit more to give. I was almost ready to give up, and knowing that this happens all the time and hearing it from, some of the biggest folks over at the Office of General Counsel, because they told me, this stuff happens all the time, unfortunately. It takes us time to figure out who these contractors are. Well, we can do so much better, and the cards should not be stacked against veterans who have honorably worn the uniform, courageously worn the uniform. If anything, we are owed at least to be treated like first-class citizens with at least an opportunity to be heard, not to be thrown out of court because of a loophole that was designed in 1946 to, when there was very little independent contractors in the VA. Right. That law was designed to do something completely different, but because of where it is now, that's their back door to deny everything and to essentially leave the veteran in holding the bag. That is where I said, you know what? I've got to step up. It can never happen again. I have dedicated my life to making this change, and I will see this through. And, I've had great success on the Hill because I have surrounded myself with a phenomenal team. I've got great VSO support. I've got a government relations company I've been working with in D.C. that have boots on the ground that has been phenomenal. I've got everyday average Americans that reach out, how can I help veterans, everybody. And once they hear the story and they see it in print and they see it coming from my mouth, it's personal because it's fraud. It's fraudulent. Right. It's criminal. And this stuff shouldn't be going on in our government. And the only way we can change it is we are the people, and that's one thing that folks need to understand is that citizen advocacy, it does work. As long as you have a clear message and as long as you engage with Congress in a positive way, because no one wants to be slandered or name called or anything. Look, we all make mistakes. And I'm the first one here that I have forgiven everybody that has been involved in my care. But the only way to create this positive change is to have positivity in Congress and to work with them.
Brian, sorry to interrupt, but I want you to share with the listeners some really important information that will make it easier for them to help this cause, which is tell us about your website, tell us about your Facebook page. What's your website, and what kind of information will people find on that website that can make it easier for them to contact members of the House, the Senate, the President, the media? Tell us about that. What's the website? Let's start with that.
Yes, thank you. The website is tallyteam.net. It's T-A-L-L-Y, team.net. And we have a lot of information on there. I think we have some sample letters. I have a great marketing team that has put together the site. It's got a congressional page to it where you can click on it, put in your zip code, and your congressional rep or your senator will pop up. You can cut and paste their sample letter and send it off, or you can make the phone calls. The phone numbers are there. There's a lot of stories that you can read or watch on the site to learn a little bit more. Of course, this has been going on for almost 4 years now, and we've been talking, you know, for a few minutes. So, of course, there's a lot to this story and to this case. And we also have a Facebook page. This is the page I started last September that has been a 100% grassroots movement. And it's a positive site. We engage with our, you know, with our platform of supporters, you know, that are veterans and just concerned citizens of our great nation. And they help tremendously by reaching out to their members of Congress and to VSOs. And they just help raise awareness, let veterans know, hey, look, you know, if you're ever injured in a VA hospital, you know, you really got to know who was seeing you because you don't want to find out when it's too late because it's just too egregious. And it's something that no family could ever prepare for. I don't even know how I'm here. It's been hard. It's not been an easy process here, but, you know, by the grace of God and prayers and, you know, just perseverance, I found ways to pick myself up and push and to get to where I am at today is just nothing short of a miracle. I don't even know how I'm here.
Well, we're glad that you've persevered, Brian, and we applaud what you're doing. Now, you know, when you mentioned how egregious it is, and to me, it is very, it's totally unacceptable that the VA holds out these medical personnel as if they're employees. In other words, a veteran, a patient going into the facility would have no clue that this particular person is an independent contractor for the reasons you've described. They're wearing the same uniform, they have the ID, the same business card, you know, they're in there the usual hours, and the VA never puts anyone on notice. There's no disclaimer saying this person's an independent contractor. And in fact, as you and I were discussing earlier today, that it seems as if the VA is also protecting these contractors by not releasing their status until very late in the whole medical malpractice system, right? And in the provider that was involved in your case, she's still working for the VA. Is that correct?
Yes, she was found. The VA had concluded by multiple opinions, is what they call them, that they failed to meet the standard of care. She failed to meet the standard of care. There was a breach in liability, and there was, you know, severe gross negligence and malpractice that occurred. But because I could never file in state court, my state statute of limitations had expired, the VA protected her on that. They didn't even report her to the state licensing board because it never happened on paper. It never happened. Because
hey, Brian?
It never went to court. Yeah.
Brian, I got a question for you. In all of your research and dealing with this independent contractor, did you ever look up whether or not she had her own malpractice insurance?
You know, I didn't, and you know, you'd have to, you know, pardon my ignorance here, but I mean, I was just an everyday average guy. I coached football and baseball. I owned my own landscape company. This was all completely like so new to me. I didn't know, one, what was going on. Two, I was completely incapacitated at the time, you know, going through all this stuff.
That's okay. Because yeah. What I'm looking at, what I'm trying to get at is, in her mind, she's a medical provider. All medical providers have malpractice insurance, okay? So if she didn't have malpractice insurance, was she expecting that to be under the umbrella of the VA? I mean, I'm just raising these questions. I mean, these are interesting issues that should be pursued.
Yeah. You know, I don't know, you know, the answers to that question, but I would, you know, what I believe is this. If you are working within the VA and behind the VA veil, and you represent yourself as a VA medical professional with business cards and the VA badge on your doctor's coat and everything else, that you should be held accountable in the facility that you are working in.
Absolutely.
Period. I mean, that goes with everybody in every profession. And just because this is a giant government bureaucracy doesn't mean that they, you know, they don't have to follow the rules, because they do need to follow the rules, and they should follow the rules. And this is why we're trying to change this law to give them a lot of their ways that they could deny these claims based on technicalities, you see. Because so again, it's dishonoring those who have honorably served our country. And that's a tough pill to swallow when you are getting the runaround and the denials, and then you find out that, you know, that we're not responsible here because it's an independent contractor, you know. But see, they're only independent contractors when they get in trouble. Other than that, they treat them just like VA employees.
And that's why I think they're independent contractors totally in name only. I mean, there's, you know, lawyers can debate for hours about status and terms and such, but just because the VA and the federal government uses a label and says they're an independent contractor certainly doesn't mean that's true. And in this case, for all the reasons you've described, Brian, it appears like the VA is holding these providers out to the patients, to the veterans, as if they're just VA employees, and there's no reason for a veteran to think otherwise. In fact, I think of the many important lessons from this show, Brian, one of which I think that will surprise many veterans listeners is that some of the providers that are taking care of them in VA facilities, whether it's the hospitals or the VA clinics, are not VA employees. And that if they ever encounter a malpractice situation, they could very easily run into the same problem you did. I mean, what do you think on that, Brian?
I have been told by the Office of General Counsel on at least a dozen times, and this is when I was having a hard time even speaking because I had some serious cognitive issues going on back in 16 and 17 and early 18. And my brother would join me on the phone, and we would be speaking to these attorneys, and we couldn't believe it. He could not believe what he was hearing. And he's a financial expert with a very large financial slash retirement type company, and he knows how tax law works and how employment statuses and all that stuff works. And he was completely taken back and floored on what we were hearing on about the employment statuses. I'm sorry, what was your question?
My first point was, Brian, I think it'll surprise many veterans, many listeners, that some of the medical providers in the VA facilities, I'm not talking about the private sector under the CHOICE program, but doctors and providers that they'll see in the facility are not actually VA employees, and that if something happens in terms of malpractice, they could easily find themselves in the same boat that you're in, and that the VA hides this information. The VA hides this information not only during the entire duration of the medical care, but even well into the period of the legal action, the claim, litigation. So it's really outrageous. Brian, if you could give our listeners...
Hold on one second. That brings me back because sometimes I lose my train of thought. But yes, this does happen all the time. I've been told by some of the highest folks at the Office of General Counsel, it does happen all the time. And when my brother was hearing this on and on and on again, my brother is actually the one that remained on the line with me. He's had my back through this. And he goes, Brian, we need to write a bill that's going to protect all veterans so this never happens again. This is absolutely unreal. I mean, it's the craziest story. I mean, you can't make it up. So that's when the tally bill come about. And like I said, I formed an online team, and it's been, you know, and the rest is soon to be history. So, yes, it does happen all the time. It happens in more cases than you would ever want to believe.
Yeah. Now, we're running a little bit out of time. We're getting close to our show, and repetition is important, Brian. So tell our listeners again your website and describe for them what they can find there so that they can contact members of Congress, the president. There's a press kit. And also remind them how they can find your Facebook page.
Yeah, sure. It's tallyteam.net, T-A-L-L-Y, tallyteam.net. And our Facebook page is Rally Around Tally, T-A-L-L-Y. And, you know, my message right now is to, you know, positively engage with your elected members of Congress and the Senate, and get on the phone, email them, and have them support and pass H.R. 3813 to protect all veterans and to have them do it without delay. Because the longer we wait, the more veterans are at risk right now. And we know how to fix this. It's an easy fix. It's a simple fix. It's simply accountability and giving the veteran the information they need to move forward so they have a shot. They have a chance to at least be seen, to be heard, to at least try to be made whole from their medical malpractice and neglect injuries. So,
right. And Brian, a couple other questions real quick. Can listeners, is it possible for them to donate financially as well as their time? Can they donate financially to help this effort?
You know what? I have taken this up on myself, and I've never asked for any money. When I've been to D.C., I've had some family members borrow me some money, and I've spent my own time, and I've spent this on my own dime. And I don't want any money. I'm not looking for any donations. I just feel better that I'm doing this for the good of the country. I'm trying to right this wrong, and I will continue to do so with my own sources, So I mean, I would feel very uncomfortable to take any donations from anybody.
I applaud and I appreciate your mindset. I know that there are many veteran groups that are nonprofit groups. They're not in it to make money, but they do need to cover their expenses. And hopefully, that there will be some other veteran groups that that we can also connect with that can also. Pick up this this torch and run with it. We've had some veteran groups on our show, some of which are quite experienced in lobbying Congress and the VA itself. I mean, it also doesn't hurt to try to get into the bureaucracy of the VA. Yes, it's a bureaucracy, but we can find some sympathetic minds in that organization. We can also work from within the organization as well as without. So I applaud what you're doing. And before we close,
You know what, Richard, if I could add just real quick, you know, just one more thing here, we don't take donations, but what a lot of folks have done that are big supporters, family members or just, folks that run their own nonprofits, they have offered, hey, Brian, can I buy your dinner tonight? And I would gladly accept that. Or, hey, let me at least, buy your flight to D.C. And I gladly accepted. I had another dear friend of mine say, man, you really need to get a tie and a dress shirt and some new slacks. And I didn't have $300 to do it. So she bought me a suit for D.C. So it's little things like that that I get back in return that make all the difference in the world. So if folks want to just help out that way, like, hey, I want to get you a room at the Holiday Inn in D.C. I don't need nothing fancy. Stuff that can help I'm all for that, but I'm not taking any money, if you will.
Understand. Brian, I look forward to working with you and helping in your cause, and we want to invite you to obviously stay in contact with us after the show and in upcoming days, weeks, and months. We also like to extend an open invitation to you to return to our show when it's convenient to you. I know you're very busy, but return to our show from time to time. Update us on progress and how, and just as another reminder to our listeners, how they can get involved in this important issue. So I hope you'll take us up on that offer, and want to thank you very much for all that you're doing and for being on our show tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity and your platform for me to describe a little bit about my story and what we're doing to help create the necessary positive change that's needed within the VA. And yes, sir, I will gladly accept your invitation and come back on the show as you wish. And hopefully the next time we speak, we'll be talking about the successful passage of H.R. 3813.
Very good. And then adding on to that. So very good. Thank you again, Brian Talley, for being on our show, and our best wishes.
Thank you, Brian.
You,
terrific.
Good night.
Good night. Keep up the good work.
Well, that was great. Thanks for Brian Talley being on our show. And again, his website is tallyteam.net, and on Facebook, Rally Around Talley. So, Rick, we just got a few minutes left in the show, maybe you just want to...
This is an amazing story, David.
Yes.
An absolute amazing story. And one that, you know, we got to keep following up on, because it's unbelievable, you know,
yes,
that the VA would take such a position.
Right.
Flies in the face of all the legal work that we ever do.
Right. Right. Yeah, and it's an issue that needs to get a lot of attention. And, again, I really urge listeners to check out the website tallyteam.net. Brian and his team have put a lot of work into that. It's really well done. And as he mentioned, the current bill is H.R. 3813, and it's been sponsored by Congressman Meadows. And obviously looking for more co-sponsors, the House, and then a Senate version, and then get it into the committees and get it passed through the committees and into the both houses and onto the president. That's the goal. So it becomes law. And then, you know, we can certainly develop ideas on how to improve it further. And one idea that I would have would be let's amend the Federal Tort Claims Act to do away with this sham independent contractor loophole entirely, rather than just limit it to accountability and notice. But
think about this. They could do away with their VA medical staff and just have all these independent contractors and never have any responsibility.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. And it's not,
I mean,
it's
I know
nightmare.
That's an absurd. That's absurd. That's an absurd.
Don't give him any ideas, Rick. Don't give him any ideas. Jeez, I know. You're right. They could. I wouldn't put it past them. All right. What about running out of time?
No, I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah. So let's go, Rick. Let's move on to our coaching into care program.
Yeah. Let's get this done. Yes. As usual, the coaching into care program that we talk about at the conclusion of all our shows is a very important program. It helps families to deal with the veterans who are having difficulty transitioning into civilian life. And coaching in the care helps those veterans and their families to do that. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching in the care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, VA's coaching the care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I want once again like to remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they do not get the help they need. help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. We'd like to thank you all for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio, Station 1. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli and Corey and Hurley Law Group. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. And again, thank our special guest tonight, Brian Talley. We hope you'll tune in next week at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 Central, 5 p.m. Mountain Time, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here at bbsradio.com, Station 1, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you'll have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.